Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Welcome to this bonus episode of Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot, my partner's Jim DeRogatis. If you'd like to be one of the first to listen to these bonus episodes, you can support us on Patreon, like Alan Huff. Thanks, Alan. Next, Jim, we have a special guest, someone we have known for quite a long time as a journalist and as a great commentator on all things rock and music in general. I wasn't around for this interview, but you had the chance to sit down with this very special guest.
Yeah, we can now add television director, Jessica Hopper.
You'll get to hear Jim's interview with Jessica in a minute on Sound Opinions.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been brewing award-winning beers in Chicago that are inspired by this city. Take 312 Lemonade Shandy, Tropical Beer Hug Double IPA, and a rotating series of hazy IPAs only available in Chicago. You know, every time we go down to Goose Island, there's another one that they're pushing on us.
That's right.
They're all good.
Absolutely. And what supporters of musical culture, you know, in the city of Chicago and elsewhere, if you go to a show in Chicago and you see that Goose Island sign, you know when you're in good hands. They're music fans as well as great beer makers at Goose Island. So we're really proud to be associated with them.
The Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find IPAs, lemonade, shandy, and limited releases in-store or at one of Goose's venues in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer.
We're back. Jim, you got to talk to Jessica about her documentary series, Women Who Rock.
I did. We talked about the process, and I even got two Women Who Rock Desert Island jukebox picks from Jessica, making her go back to being a lowly critic after having been a television director. Here's Jessica. Well, let's welcome back to Sound Opinions a friend of the show, storied music critic, is how Epics put it. Jessica, I like that. You are a storied music critic and now a director. How does one become a director, Jessica?
Well, I have been working for the last few years occasionally as a producer of various, you know, music documentary things, be it podcasts or some short form doc stuff. And then last year, I got a call from the folks behind Women Who Rock. Mm-hmm. I thought it was just to talk about helping them shape the direction of it. And then about 2 days later, I got a call back and they say, well, we've discussed it and we'd like you to direct it. And I was like, okay, the longest thing I've directed is about 6 minutes long. We're talking about 4 hours of network cable. Okay. If you think I got it, then one of the more surprising things is how much directing a docuseries is like putting together a magazine, which is something that I have a lot of experience doing. So very fortunately, it wasn't without its challenges. You know, filming anything amidst COVID certainly has its challenges. Yeah. But it was very natural for me, and I'm really grateful to be toddling back into that path again. I really loved it, and I really loved getting to just talk to all these incredible, iconic women. So that's how it came to be.
It is quite an accomplishment. Women Who Rock, 4 hours on Epics. We're talking just after the last episode. But, you know, what is time anymore? Post-COVID, in the streaming era, people can still see it. You know, we thought, given the breadth of fascinating artists that you talk to, you know, Chaka Khan and Mavis Staples to St. Vincent and Taylor Swift and Yola and Billie Eilish and on and on and on, we would let you play critic again, having been director, and give us 2 Desert Island picks and tell the stories. One we asked for, because I loved seeing Kira Rosler featured. You know, people forget the influence she was on hardcore punk as a member of Black Flag. And I love Dose as well, you know, a great band. What drew you to her? Dina Weymouth, you know, would be obvious. Doe, of course. But Kira would not have been.
Well, you know, I'm someone who, you know, being in my early 40s, I grew up in Minneapolis, kind of same time as you. And there really was, you know, this kind of lore back then about Black Flag. And some of the only punk books you could get were these Rollins books. And so, you know, that was kind of, you know, the definitive punk histories oftentimes were really centered on Black Flag and Rollins. I mean, as they rightfully should be. But there was so little information about Kira. She was kind of incidental, even though she was, you know, really part of a really important era of Black Flag, a really powerful, influential time of change in Black Flag. And I just wanted more. And also, you know, Women Who Rock, we don't have any cisgender men. We just have women artists and women historians and trans women in the whole lineup. And so, you know, we weren't going to have Rollins in there talking about Black Flag. And so it was the opportunity for Kira. And, you know, for me, Kira was really an idol in many ways, because the way that people talked about her was with like such a different kind of reverence. And I don't know if it's because she was in Black Flag or because she was just such a, you know, technical player. People understood what it meant to be in Black Flag. And as she talks about in the show, as I interviewed her, you know, that she would play for 2.5 hours and then run backstage and jam her hands into the ice bucket, because she said if she didn't, she wouldn't be able to play the next day. And she said that was part of being in Black Flag, was that it was going to take everything out of you. And that was kind of the challenge and the true excitement of it.
And this is a point that I remember Joy Press had made in her original book, and she wrote about gender in rock, and she wrote a great piece about this series. The instrumentalists, whether you're going all the way back to Maureen Tucker or Kim Gordon in Sonic Youth or Brenda Sauter in the Feelies, you know, they're so crucial to those bands, and yet they often get overlooked that they're women in a band.
I think she plays very much like a similar role in music culture as Tina Weymouth, who is also in our series and, you know, really held up by the likes of Kate Pearson and Nona Hendrix from LaBelle, you know, saw her play. And Natalie Merchant said, you know, she was really kind of the first woman in a band with men where people really took it seriously as an instrumentalist and an artist. And now, you know, I think it's really hard for us to imagine that at the time of, you know, the mid to late 70s, when we look back at canonical music criticism, you know, as historians and fans, to see that really this was kind of the first time period where a lot of music criticism and music press started to just understand that women were artists and they could be artists, you know. And even our, you know, beloved Joni, people really would hold her up to Patty and say, Patty's a rock and roll artist because she seems like she has a libido, and, you know, Joni Mitchell just seems too pure, she's never gonna rock and roll. And, you know, that there was these kind of really messed up and patriarchal ideas of what it took to be in a band. And so, you know, these early women, particularly in all-male bands, they were really at the vanguard. They were really at the frontier. And the first time that I even figured out who Kira was from the live version of Who's Got the 10 and a Half.
Is that the track you're going to go with?
Yes, because that's,
yes,
that's where I was like, who's Kira? No one had ever mentioned her to me. You know, and it was like, wait, this is kind of like an amazing effed up joke to throw her into this song.
Over there on bass is Kira. And Kira's got the Well, one and a half, two and a half, three and a half. Well, I hate to break the news to you, but Kira's got the 10 and a half. Kira's got the 10 and a half.
That was one of my introductions to Black Flag, and something that always really stuck in my head: the things you learn from songs. That there's a girl in the band.
That's a great track, and it was great to see her. All right, so completely free reign. It seems reductive to boil down 4 hours of so many fascinating and wonderful women. But, you know, we're talking about songs, and we're going to play them. So if you had another Desert Island pick that highlights something in the show, there's so many great moments. Starts and ends with Mavis. I love that. But who else would you go with?
I think I'm going to have to go with Are You Lonely? By LaBelle.
Where were you when you first heard that song?
I first heard and heard about LaBelle when I was researching my first book, which is kind of a guide for young women in music. And I was just going down the whole timeline of all women bands. And I was like, LaBelle, I've heard that. I've seen this picture. Who are they? And I put it on and I was like, how did I not? like I was, Jim, I was mad. I was mad at people not telling me about them. I was mad at the music patriarchy for, like, you know, erasing them. And then I see these pictures and they got these plumed headdresses and, like, they're playing with the meters. And I was like, this is just sick. How did I not know about this? But I think Are You Lonely is one of the places that they really seamlessly blend all of their beautiful, radical, spiritual ideas about identity and a future and togetherness with just funk rock that doesn't quit.
They kick butt. No two ways about it.
No. They're true. They're like the original, like, divas in rock.
Another artist, Patti LaBelle, who I think often is overlooked in terms of being as influential as she was.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the really important folks for me to make sure to get in the show, you know, because when I came on board to this show, they're like, well, we already have Shaka and Shania and Cheryl and Pat Benatar. And I was like, okay, like, then I need to make sure that we get some of the women that were really in the pioneering spaces so that we can kind of cover this full spectrum. And I insisted on Nona Hendricks. And Nona Hendricks, you know, if your listeners don't know, just she started out with Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells and, you know, doing the Chitlin circuit back in the day. And they wore opera gloves and had the tiaras and the coiffed hair. And as Nona says, you know, a perfect picture of womanhood. Patti LaBelle, Nona, Sarah Dash, they started as Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells. And then as the times kind of start to change, you know, they're really feeling called to change too by both, you know, the Black Power movement, by the Black Panthers, by the fight for the ERA and the women's liberation movement that was really gaining a lot of steam then. And, you know, in the show, Nona talks about, she says, we knew that times needed to change because everything was changing around us, and we needed songs that reflected the change. And they go from being, you know, this coiffed girl group into being LaBelle and writing their own songs and, you know, producing their own records and writing songs that really reflected, you know, the heart of Black womanhood at that time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think people forget how empowering they were and how empowered they were.
And just that they were pretty far out there, but a lot of their songs were kind of occupying some of that same space as the Staple Singers, but they were more rock, they were glam. They had the same person make their costumes who later went on to make Kiss's kind of, like,
yeah,
the leather trapunto, but all silver. And it was really steeped in Afrofuturism.
Yeah, super heroines they were.
Yes, absolutely. And really about saying, you know, there's going to be Black people in the future. There's Black women in the future. And it was really radical. And I think, you know, for people that love, like a lot of contemporary music that really puts out that kind of a message. And this is a great origination point, you know, for people who love artists like Janelle Monáe.
Is Epix thinking about letting you do more? I mean, obviously there could be 100 episodes of Women in Rock.
Tell me about it. When we were making it, I was like, how can we have another 8 episodes? We only have 8 minutes with Sheryl Crow in this episode. People keep saying, when's season 2? And it's like, well, this isn't a seasonal show. It's a docu-series. But, you know, very fortunately, I'm helming some other projects, both as a director and as a producer, and they're all steeped in feminist music history. So watch this space, as they say.
Of course, we would expect nothing less. And in between, you're still editing for University of Texas, right?
Yeah, I edit the American Music series, and we actually have a great Chicago book coming down the pike about cranky records. And then we also have a really incredible memoir this fall from Miss Margot Price. It's a true country memoir.
I think Sound Opinions has already heard about both of those books and certainly excited. I love the fact that no matter how much I wrote about cranky records, they would never send me a promo. And I would run into those guys and I'd say, I don't mind buying your records. I really don't.
They are true psychedelic experiences, so many of them.
They were fantastic. Well, Jessica, it's always fun to talk to you, and congrats on this great accomplishment. Bringing Sister Rosetta Tharpe up to date with Kira Rosler. I love it. I just love the breadth of what you did in this. Because I will admit, initially I thought, Women in Rock? Okay, this has been done. Oh, but Jessica's doing it. It's been done and it shouldn't ever have to be done. Of course there are freaking women in rock.
Yeah.
There always have been.
Yes.
You know.
We get to go back to the very beginning with these blues women. And you know, that was, you know, bringing Sister Rosetta and bringing all those early blues women, Ida Cox and all those folks into the conversation, because, you know, that Black women have just so often been erased at the roots of rock. And so we start
which is why it's still necessary to keep shining these lights on. And of course, the best way always is to celebrate with the music. So thanks for playing Desert Island with us. And keep us posted always, Jessica, on what you're up to.
Thank you, Jim. It's always a pleasure to be on Sound Opinions.
That's it for this bonus episode. Thank you to Jessica for taking the time to chat with us. You can watch all 4 episodes of her docuseries, Women Who Rock, on Epix or other streaming services. Let us know what you think of the series in our Facebook group or leave a message on our website.
Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, and our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo. Our social media consultant is Katie Cott. Thanks for listening.